the Premier League on OTB.
Rashford thinks it into Cavani! Edison Cavani wins it!
Exclusive Premier League live commentaries every Sunday. The very best expert analysis on your phone and for free. Download the OTB Sports app now.
Football on Off the Ball.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 7 o'clock, because it's football all the way now until the end of the show. We're showcasing live commentary of Ireland's game against Azerbaijan from 5 with Stephen Doyle and Stewie Byrne calling the shots from the Aviva Stadium. Before the match, Football Saturday is always broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward with me in studio, and Dan McDonnell is already in situ at Lansdowne Road. You can text us 53106, tweet us at Off the Ball. We're streaming the conversation as well. Listen on News Talk. Watch us on the Off the Ball social and digital channels for Periscope and Twitter, at Off the Ball, YouTube, Facebook, and on the OTB Sports app. I don't know how you felt about the other night's game against Portugal. I certainly felt, folks, that it was the most enjoyable game I've seen probably since Euro 2016, since we played France or Sweden in the Euros when things were really on the line. We're playing the 8th-ranked team in the world. They have Ronaldo, Ruben Dias, Bruno Fernandes, Bernardo Silva, Diogo Jota in their team. We played with heart, we played with a bit of skill. We should have won the game, and then we got brilliance from Ronaldo, two headers. I view that Stephen Kenny should get a new deal. I think that we should give him the certainty and give the players the certainty that this is a long-term project, that we're building towards something here, that we're building good performances, we're playing football, and eventually that the results will follow. The results are obviously important, but I do think that we want to give the manager a bit of certainty. Maybe we have to wait for the next five games to see what happens, but I was really enthused that we nearly beat a team ranked so high in the world with an away victory the other night. Look at the ages of our players. Gavin Bazunu is 19, Amoba Madele 19, Adam Ealy is 20, Aaron Connolly is 21, Darragh Shea is 22, Jamie McGrath is 24, Josh Cullen is 25. The under 21s won yesterday. I think there's green shoots, there's positivity. There was a bit of edge of the seat about the other night. And I don't know what you think out there, listeners, but that's my view. And Johnny and Dan, everybody else will have their views. 53106. You want to get involved in the conversation. It's the hot topic. It's the biggest show in town. We want the national team to be doing well. And hopefully the other night was the sign of something new. Johnny, how did you feel about it?
Pretty much all that, JD. Yeah, it's strange coming in here for a game against Azerbaijan that's, you know, effectively almost a dead rubber, and after three defeats in the group, yet kind of so much hope and so much renewed hope really about this Irish team. Do you know, the game the other night, I think Portugal, they had enough chances to win the game. Let's not argue against that. But just the way Ireland played, and the youth that was kind of, I suppose, the youth that they played, but also the youth that was imposed in the sense of making decisions and bringing on Mobi Madele, it was just so encouraging. Augmented by the 21s, produced a really good performance yesterday against Bosnia Herzegovina, and you know, the sight of Evan Ferguson coming on at the age that he is, playing against under 21s, yet looking like he's older than them. You know, there are a lot of green shoots. I think the performance of Conor Coventry and Gavin Kilkenny for the 21s, but it's a funny thing, JD. You know, if Ronaldo scores that penalty, and you fully expect him to score a penalty regardless of who he's taken on, let alone a 19-year-old who's just made a terrible mistake. So you expect him to score. If Ronaldo scores that penalty, Portugal go on and win 2 or 3-0, which is very feasible. And as Ronnie Whelan said in commentary, there's absolutely no need to be passing the ball like that. And I think Stephen Kenny wouldn't disagree with that. What would the narrative be? Instead, we had this amazing game, really, that had everything going for it. A referee who almost seemed like he wanted Ronaldo to break the record, smiling as he booked him. Two amazing goals from Ronaldo, but apart from that, a brilliant Irish performance in so many respects. And bear in mind, this is a performance where Stephen Kenny said Aaron Connolly is at 70% of his potential. I thought he'd a really, really poor game in terms of what he can actually do, and he looked mentally and physically just off it. So we were half carrying one of our attacking players, yet we still produced that performance. And I've been really dying to come in on the show today. I've just been in such good form, which is amazing, really, because we've lost our first three games. And this game is strange against Azerbaijan because it's at once irrelevant in terms of result, but we kind of need to win as well.
Yeah, we need to win with a bit of tempo. We need to play on the front foot. Dan McDonnell is at Lansdowne Road. And Dan, you were in Portugal. So Dan, what did you see over there in Faro that maybe the layman didn't see on TV?
Well, I know. I think, to be fair, John, like, I think there's a sort of there's a crossover in views. I think, I mean, you know, you did get a sense of a couple more things, even the extent to which maybe Matt Doherty was struggling in the second half. I'm not sure if that necessarily came through. I mean, at one stage, Ryan Manning was changed to come on. and sort of sat down. And you know, that was, I mean, unfortunately, like the two late goals. I mean, Doherty was exceptional, but it came from that side of the pitch. Now, obviously, James McLean won't be happy with his role in the first one. But I suppose you got a slight sense of the momentum building. But no, it's sort of along the lines of really what was said there already. I mean, there was this sense that certainly the first 5-10 minutes there was this nervousness generally, and you're thinking, oh no, this is going to be a long evening. But really, it was as the first half went on, it was the number of times maybe where you started to get hope was just realizing that Adam Eder was an outlet every time and fancied his chances every time. I would have been critical of Aaron Connolly on Wednesday, but what I would say is that when Stephen Kenny spoke about this yesterday in the press conference and said that Connolly did a great job for the team in the sense that they'd identified this gap that existed between Pepe and Cancelo, particularly because Cancelo would be attacking so much. And okay, Aaron Connolly, you could see his execution was that of a player who maybe wasn't 100% sharp or happy at the moment, but he kept taking up the right positions, and that there was an element of a game plan there. And honestly, it's a weird game sometimes, that sometimes you're sitting in a stadium and you know you have your match report sort of written, and you're fearing the rewrite, but it's sort of, you know, Ireland are 1-0 up and you're thinking, okay, well, this isn't going to be the case really, you know, something's going to happen. But it did get to around 80 minutes where it's like, yeah, they're it's not that they're comfortable, but it was just that Portugal were getting a bit frustrated at times. And I know, you know, they did keep the ball well and keep moving it, and that's what teams do. You see good teams score a lot of late goals because eventually the effort just leads to defenders switching off for that half a yard. But it did almost get to that sense where Bazunu made a big save from that free kick towards the end. You're thinking, this is actually going to happen. This really is going to happen. And yeah, just that sense of you couldn't help but have your eyes drawn to the bench, with the Irish bench, when the winning header went in. And just to look at the body language, and really, you know, after the first goal, there was anger that they couldn't get the subs on, that they'd been trying to get on for a few minutes. But after the second goal, it was almost just that sense of desolation. And that's just the one thing you need to be careful of. I know we're going to move on and maybe talk about today, and I get Johnny's enthusiasm there, and I felt that enthusiasm after the game. But I guess we've had a degree of enthusiasm after the Slovakia game, albeit it was a heartbreaking penalty shootout loss. There probably, I'm sure if you played back the discussions after the Serbia game, there probably would have been a similar tone to some degree. This was obviously, I think, a better performance than either of those two. But it's the one little caveat there. You know, we can sort of start to declare the corner turned, and then just realise that there is a game at home today. And I mean, not every player is caught up in the the narrative, the discussion around, say, the future of the manager, that a lot of us are probably interpreting the discussion of the Irish team and looking at it through that lens. I mean, there are some players out on that pitch on Wednesday who may, you know, who will be sort of in their 30s and well into their 30s. Not that many of them, but, you know, when the Euro 2024 comes round, and the fact that the World Cup 2022 looks to be gone, that's a real punch to the gut, you know, and that's something you just have to be very conscious and careful of here. That not everyone is looking at in this bigger picture view. I mean, some players will always think they can win the next game no matter what their attitude is, and they were probably thinking, you know, they were engaged in the game, but there's part of them thinking, we're back in this World Cup campaign. And when you lose that way, there's just that slight apprehension that still hangs over this game today.
Yeah, I was reading Richard Dunn this morning, and actually in your paper, Dan, and I'll just give some quotes from it. The Portugal performance is brilliant. The team did really well. Everything that the manager spoke about in the previous games is evident in Faro. He went on to say, and yet it will only matter if the team put together some results now, starting on Saturday against Azerbaijan. It's all about results now. I don't think a good performance but unlucky defeat at home to Serbia is what we should be praising. Have you seen any difference between, say, Slovakia and Serbia first time with now? Do we have enough evidence to say that the training camp in Spain or the work Anthony Barry's done is getting to us to a better place, or do you still have to wait until see what happens at 5 o'clock today?
No, listen, I am pretty confident of that, but I probably might have been confident before the Luxembourg game as well too. So, I mean, you know, I have to sort of, as I said, if you played back comments or sort of, read out words from that time, you would have spoken that way. Now, I do think the summer was significant. I know that people will always say that. If you ask them, do you think the summer camp was beneficial, they're not going to say no. You know, like they're always going to give a positive response. But I do think there is something in the fact that they, and this is more not just like press conference stuff, but certainly what I've heard myself, I suppose, on the, on, you know, you hear on the grapevine that that summer camp went quite well. And like you have to remember that there was some stuff going around, say last November, which I think, you know, there was certainly a mischievous element to it about, you know, unhappy camps and all this type
video
of thing.
Video gates.
Yeah, the video gate stuff. Like, and I mean, there's no doubt that there was, you know, there was spinning of versions of events going on there. But, I mean, at the same time, the one thing I would say is that you did also hear that those camps were pretty miserable. Like, you know, you had sort of COVID issues hanging over it. Players couldn't really mingle. They couldn't really mix. And the one thing that Stephen Kenny did do when he came in was he pretty much changed the entire staff, you know, the backroom staff. Now, I think that was ultimately, if you're going to support a manager, and I'm talking about, I'm going beyond Robbie Keane here and that stuff. I mean, just all the way down to sort of kit men and all of those people that, that players would be used to. And that was a lot of turnover in a small period of time. And then you go into a camp situation, September, October, November, where people are sort of confined to their rooms. There's not as many familiar faces around. There's some new faces coming into the camp. And you did hear that, like, it wasn't necessarily a great time. And to be fair, I think Stephen Kenny probably, you know, verified that to some degree in some of his answers. Then you had sort of the Videogate fallout and sort of a couple of people leaving. But it does appear that actually, what the summer allowed them to do, and Matt Doherty spoke about this yesterday, was just for people to spend a bit of time around each other, get to know each other a bit more, get to know the staff, get to know some of the characters, not in a pressurised environment where you arrive in and there's a game in 2 days, or, you know, doing, you know, four players have been lost to COVID and all of this is going on. And they also had a really good coach in Anthony Barry coming in, who was just arriving in from winning the Champions League, who joined the group. And it does seem like there was genuine benefit to that, and just getting to know some of the characters. It might take a while to just get to know them and fully understand how they work. And I think, like, you know, you did hear stuff in the grapevine, not this, like, some of the bigger picture stuff going around, which was just, as I said, I think there was a mischievous element to it, but I think there was little changes around the hotel and how they do things. And I mean, Stephen Kenny has mixed things up again this week and has brought the team out of Castleknock, their normal base, into town to stay in town, to train in the Aviva the day before the games, to try and make it a bit, feel it a bit more like home. And these are all the things about putting your stamp and putting your own personality on proceedings. And I think that that's the stuff that I do think, if there was a 10-day camp in the summer and things were very bad and people weren't happy with how things are going, there's probably still elements around that could have managed to get that information out in some shape or form. Didn't happen. And I think that that's what would fill you with a small bit more encouragement, that maybe there's a buy-in there, there's a belief there. And I think you saw that in the performance of Wednesday. But in saying that, it has to be backed up today. You know, it does. I'm not sure if I necessarily agree with the thesis that the result against Serbia, like the absolute bottom line result against Serbia, is part of, well, you know, if you play badly and don't win, well, that's it's a disaster. I think you can explain that as part of the growing up process and then transition process. But I do think a game like this at home to Azerbaijan, where you've got whatever turns up today, you know, 25,000 or so people, and it's a test that is similar to a test you faced earlier in the year and failed. To represent progress, there needs to be more sense of control and awareness of how to deal with the challenge of breaking down a team that might defend against you. Because I think Stephen Kenny has proved that for sending a team away from home and having a game plan to compete away from home against a decent side, I think he's proven he can do that. But clearly there's another side to that, which is being able to rather than surprise people, you know, with your sort of approach, your sort of brave approach as an underdog, it's to be that little bit more dominant at home. Because I did make the point in my preview in the paper today that possibly the games that were the biggest driver for change in terms of people deciding they needed something different and wanted something different was the home games here against the likes of Georgia and middle-ranking teams, where you're seeing teams come here and control parts of the game, and that it made it a hard watch for people who were going to matches. And I think people would expect something different from a game like this.
I think the fan experiences at the hurling final, Limerick and Cork, and I really was so attuned to the fan experience and enjoying something again, more so than they would have been before the pandemic started. This is the first game with fans since November 2019. It's Kenny's first game with fans. Matt Doherty was fascinating yesterday, speaking about that his performance improves with supporters there, and their temperature, their response is going to be so vital now going forward for Stephen Kenny and his players.
Yeah, today will be an interesting litmus test, JD, to see how they respond to this team, because I've had people text me who were massive Stephen Kenny doubters who have basically turned a corner after the game the other day. And I think everyone who watched that game that I've spoken to, a lot of them doubting Stephen Kenny and doubting this or that, was really encouraged by it. I think that'll be evinced in the stadium today. I think they're going to get a very good reception. You've got to remember how many of these players are young, and even look at the midfield that was kind of half thrown together the other night. McGrath, Cullen and Jeff Hendrick. I mean, I was looking at this midfield and I was like, this is really concerning, but that's basically all we have here. And the performance that they put in, and then you have, you know, Adam Ida, who could become something of a cult hero down the line, and just the bravery of the way they played. And I absolutely loved Bazuna in the sense of, like, get up and get on with it. He made a mistake with the short pass, but he got up and with the, you know, the world watching to some extent, he just saved a penalty from Ronaldo. And Ronaldo gave almost no mention after the game about Ireland's heroic performance, but he did kind of congratulate Bazuna apparently leaving the pitch. And it was a brave effort. And I think Dan's point is very valid. Stephen Kenny's, I think he's sort of alluded to the fact that he's kind of learning on the job a bit as well. He found out maybe in that Luxembourg game that they couldn't produce performances back to back in a window like that. He will change it up today, but the tempo will be completely different with 25,000 people there, because the Luxembourg game, the longer that went on, it was almost like playing in to the sound of ghosts and the train going by in the dark. It was an eerie atmosphere, and you could probably sense, I wasn't at the game now, but you could probably sense the unease of the players on the pitch. And I think when we talk about Stephen Kenny potentially getting a contract, I think the narrative has changed since the Delaney days, where it was kind of more qualified for tournament at all costs, and Delaney's FAI was more about kind of high profile managers coming in. As much as he was involved in Stephen Kenny coming in, it was high profile managers. We now have a coaching team that could be very interesting. And what I'm hearing about Anthony Barry as well, JD, there's so much talk about Stephen Kenny, very little about Anthony Barry. You look at Daryl O'Shea when Daryl O'Shea was injured the other night, look at the body language between Andrews, Barry and Stephen Kenny about who to bring on, which was the teenager Moba Mendele. They're basically looking at Barry rather than Stephen Kenny, and he is kind of a go-to man in terms of tactical situations. Really, really good reviews of him. And when I look at what the 21s did yesterday and some of the players coming through, I think we're nowhere near the team Stephen Kenny could have longer term. That's the point. I think a lot of these players wouldn't be playing if he had others available and if others had matured. And I think the road ahead, it could be very, very bright. And let's kind of have a little bit of faith in them. And I think that will be showcased by the fans today. I think they'll get behind them from the get-go.
If you ask me who won the transfer window in the UK, it was Chelsea, because they got Lukaku in. I think United, when I saw them last week against Wolves, I still think they're a bit out of shape, even though they've signed Ronaldo and that. I'm just fascinated, Dan, how senior is Anthony Barry's role at Chelsea under Tuchel? Because this is a club, this is a manager, these people are going places.
Yeah, so Anthony Barry's role, JD, he was hired by Frank Lampard previously, and the connection there, Anthony Barry was previously working at Wigan with Paul Cook, but it ended up on the same pro license coach as Frank Lampard. So and apparently was, you know, a top student on that pro license course. You know, he was the one that sort of stood out in terms of a lot of his presentations. So when Lampard went to Chelsea, he took Barry with him, and he has been very much described as a set piece expert, and like that was a big part of his brief. You know, he's very much responsible for set pieces, and Chelsea had a very good record in set pieces in the Lampard era. But I've also spoken to some people who've sort of said, well, don't pigeonhole him as that as well. He'd be sort of familiar with his work, that there's a lot more to it. But when Lampard went, all the coaching staff pretty much went, but Barry was retained, because already I think word had got round the club and with the hierarchy that, you know, this was a young coach that they you know, they shouldn't really allow to leave the building. So Tuchel has retained them, and I do think he retains that key role in the area of sort of set pieces and planning in that respect. But he is still beyond that. Like, he is a coach as well, who is part of their inner sanctum, their inner circle. Like, I think, you know, if you look at the Chelsea staff list, I think there's maybe, you know, there's a couple of coaches listed, and he is amongst them. It's not like he's down the list as a number 9 or number 10 or something, you know, or he's in the background sort of doing bibs and cones. Like, he's very much to the forefront of it. You can see him on the sideline when, you know, in the dugout when Chelsea are playing. So it was something of a coup for Stephen Kenny to get him in. And it's a bizarre, I mean, Damien Duff is unbelievably well regarded. You speak to people who are involved and you know, at underage level, who've worked with some of his teams, and very intense and very dedicated. And clearly the feeling would have been that losing Damien Duff was a massive blow. But it hasn't necessarily, and it is not any disrespect to Damien Duff, but it hasn't turned out to be the case, because they've ended up bringing in a coach who, coaching-wise, doesn't have the pedigree and the name recognition and the face recognition, but in terms of his coaching work and where he's working in between international camps, like, it is at a really high level. And certainly, again, you talk about messages coming out of March and June, I think the players really took to him as well too. Really good character around the place, and I've no doubt that's a big factor. And I mean, again, I mean, this was something that Stephen Kenny and actually Rory Higgins, his former scout, is now the Derry City. I mean, this was something that they went and, you know, they were the ones who brought in Anthony Barry, rather than, say, you know, the FAI doing it. So I think they did well to execute and get in that high calibre candidate.
Very much at home is Leona Maguire, just as a breakaway in the Solheim Cup. The Cavan native and Mel Reid are 2-up in their match against Nelly Korda, the best player in the world, and Jessica Korda. This is in the Saturday foursomes, the opening matches between Europe and the United States and Ohio. So the United States are up in 2, Europe are up in 2, and Leona Maguire up in her match. Great to see her starting so well in the Solheim Cup. The audience beginning to speak about this, obviously, as we would expect. 53106, the text number, for a cost of 30 cent. You're getting way ahead of yourselves. Portugal still battered Ireland. Kenny's not up to the standard of coach required. We'll struggle again today. Not alone is Connolly not up to the standard required, but he goes to ground way too easily, which gets the referee on the team's back. Definitely left Kenny continue, says Dermot. It was a brilliant match, John. The lads really played their hearts out. It showed how much wearing the jersey means to them. Me and my hubby Sean are driving up to the match of the Aviva. Come on, Ireland. We'll enjoy the day. Hi, lads. What's the Russian giving Stephen Kenny a new deal? Maybe after a run of wins on the Portugal game, sometimes it's easier to play well against a top side. Bigger test this evening, says Sean. Robinson for Connolly, who was and has been terrible for 18 months now, and that's a team to get behind. No more McLean, but Hendrick still has a role, says Sean in Sligo. And another one of our texters, I'm in full agreement with Johnny Ward. The naysayers don't seem to be able to see past their nose at the long-term project. All they seem to want is qualification at all costs, just so that every decade or so they can get rid of the credit unions to go away for a few weeks waving their shoes in the air, drinking cans for breakfast, dinner and tea, viewing success, not getting into fights and picking up their own litter, things normal people take for granted. Well, hopefully watching the team get a plucky draw or victory in the third group game, says Jamie and Roscommon.
It's interesting, Jamie's point there. I get what he's saying, and I often go back to the game in Cardiff where we won 1-0, and it was one of the most poisonous footballing performances by a winning team I've ever seen. And people were celebrating at that game because, you know, rightly, it was a big win. Now, it set us up for a bit of a fall against Denmark. But Stephen Kenny is on the record as saying he didn't really enjoy watching Ireland when he was younger under, we'll say, the Jack Charlton days. Now, the Jack Charlton days, I don't think anyone could... I mean, you couldn't say a word against Jack. But now we're at a stage where we're not particularly good, and we also were playing very bad football. But this goes to a deeper thing. You know, all of the underage teams, JD, now, and we have, like, there's a totally different DNA coming up in terms of young kids in Ireland. These underage teams are basically kind of singing from the same hymn sheet, more or less, in terms of playing nice, attractive football. All of the underage Irish teams I've seen playing over the last few years, particularly Kenny's 21s, have been playing a very nice brand of football. And that's kind of like that change. You can't then have an international team that play basically to try and get nil all draws away from home and to try to win the game with 30% possession and so forth. So I think Kenny is quite brave. And I've said this before. It's not that he's reinventing the wheel. It's just that he's trying to inculcate a little bit of self-belief in players who for so long have been effectively told by successive managers that they're not really good enough to achieve by playing on a level playing field of technical quality football. And we have have very, very good young players coming up. We have probably a lot more pace coming up in some of our underage teams, and pace is such a big thing. That's why Aaron Connolly was dangerous the other night, despite the fact he wasn't playing well. And we had a situation where we have a 19-year-old kid from Talla who was able to overcome, like, playing a bad pass like that and save for Ronaldo. And I suppose what really encourages me is teams are built on defences primarily, and we could have, I mean I don't think it's unfair to say Gavin Bazuna has the potential to be an outrageously good goalkeeper, but the number of centre halves that we have coming through as well, I mean you forget Collins is there as well, obviously O'Shea got injured. We have so much in terms of the bedrock of the team. If we can sort out midfield and look at a striker coming through as well, like maybe Ida, maybe Connolly, maybe Troy Parrott, it's hard not to be a little bit excited. But like I've been fed up of watching Ireland for years, to be honest, JD, playing a horrible brand of football, and we've been pigeonholed in Europe as a typical bad British team that can't really play, you know, up and at them, you know, score from set pieces and all that. I'd like us to be a lot more than that, and I know from talking to Stephen Kenny when he got the job, he wanted us to be a lot more than that.
Well, Fernando Santos was saying that, the Portuguese coach, before the game, he was kind of comparing us to a British team, and he's the man who didn't really get the shape the other night Ireland did. But I suppose Dan being there, Ronaldo, the movement for that second goal was sensational.
I mean, like, I suppose it's one of those things you will step back in time and go, I mean, you did witness history. Just, I mean, could have done with the 1-1 maybe history as opposed to the 2-1 version of it. But it is greatness, you know. It is, like, I mean, it just almost was like it was scripted, the whole thing, just how it actually, how the conclusion sort of was reached. Because again, like, you know, he was terrible for large parts of the game, you know. Like, he was sort of drifting around the place. You could see people getting frustrated with him, even sort of tactically for Portugal. I think he was even inhibiting him a small bit at times, because he was sort of, now I know they're quite fluid with their movement and the forward players that they have, but certainly you could see he was sort of getting a bit almost getting a bit anxious, getting a bit frustrated. The Stephen Kenny said afterwards, I don't think many other players or anyone else could have scored that second goal. And I was like, really? I mean, but then you do watch it back and you just think it is that, it's almost very hard to explain what it is. It's just that, he always seems to be the one that's in the position when the ball comes into the box. But, like, obviously that's not a fluke. Like, that's not a coincidence. They know if they can sort of loft it to a particular department, he can hang back and find the vulnerable position as far as the opposition are concerned. And even just the athleticism to sort of get enough power on the ball, because it wasn't necessarily running onto it in such a way that it there was natural power from his angle of attack. He almost had to generate it himself too. I mean, yeah, from where I was sort of diagonal angle behind it. I mean, it really was one of those, you couldn't have any questions about Gavin Bazunu for it. It is extraordinary to see it happen. I mean, it's just an extreme version of that line about how you sort of tolerate these strikers, you know, who might do nothing for 90 minutes of a game, but then they score. You know, it's like people, it's a different level, it's a different grade, I suppose, although not really, you know. But look at something like Robbie Keane's record. I mean, there would have been games in Ireland, you know, where Ireland were in general play, Robbie Keane may not have done that much at times, but then at the end, I remember his game against Georgia where he scored twice to win 2-1, and it does help to have those players in your ranks. I mean, and Robbie Keane's goal scoring record is for his country is amazing, and yet Ronaldo has got, what, 40 goals more or something. Now, granted, like, he's been playing for a very good side for all of his international career, pretty much, but like, he did, like, and it's almost, you could get into this discussion before that game the other day about, in a strange way, with all the young talent they have and the ability they have, is this focus on Ronaldo holding them back in some way? You know, like, will they be liberated when this all-powerful celebrity presence, who, like, dwarfs the rest of them, even if they're global stars, in terms of his own status, and yet, like, he is the one that just drags them out again and again. And like, you even think, you go back to Serbia, their game with Serbia in March. Now, they drew 2-2, but he had a goal disallowed at the end, which shouldn't have been disallowed. Like, that's, you know, the two biggest games of the group so far. Who's popping up in injury time to do something? It's Ronaldo, you know. And that's, I wouldn't say privileged to be there is the wrong word, because it didn't necessarily feel like that at the time, especially when you have to torch a match report you've just written. But, but like, you know, in the passing of time, you do realise. And I did a piece last week speaking about speaking to players who played against Ronaldo, various Irish players, and, like, you know, good players as well, who have, like, played against, list off a litany of superstars they've played against, that people will be happy to play against one of them, and yet there is this sort of elevated standing that Ronaldo has. And I'm sure even in time, Gavin Bazunu and Andrea Mobley-Badelli, I'm just looking at the two of them walking out on the pitch here a few minutes ago, what an experience, what a life experience for them at 19 years of age to be in the middle of that. And yeah, it didn't work out the way they would have wanted, but it's exposing you to situations at the start of your career that can only stand to you later on.
Just got a text in here, interesting text, and I'm kind of thinking to myself as well, because I didn't really see him track back. Obviously, you've just very well eloquently articulated, Dan, the brilliance of Ronaldo, but Paul Pogba for me is a luxury free player for Man United who needs that freedom to be at his best. We saw that in the first couple of games of the season. I thought against Wolves they were out of shape, and then Ronaldo, well, is the degree of luxury around him again up front for United going forward. Somebody's been in touch. How will Bruno Fernandes and Ronaldo work for United? Fernandes was non-existent on Wednesday. Was he non-existent, Dan?
Yeah, no. The thing about it is they're so stacked in terms of their attacking talent, Portugal, that, I mean, this was the encouraging thing from the Irish perspective, that it became apparent that if you could play one or two passes out, you suddenly realised they were very committed, because they played Ronaldo and Rafa Silva and Jota. And so Bruno Fernandes quite naturally ended up being sort of deeper. Now, he obviously was taken down for the penalty, so, like, he wasn't completely anonymous. He was involved in what might have proved to be a significant event. But it is a case of there is an overpowering presence that Ronaldo has in that side, that the others are sort of the actors around that. And it probably suits Jota to some degree in terms of how he operates. But certainly for Bruno Fernandes, it's just that more is asked of him, maybe going the other way. And he's maybe asked to almost been expected to maybe try and control games from midfield in a way that doesn't it's not necessarily how you would describe his play at Manchester United sometimes. And that's why during the Euros, not directly why, but I mean, Renato Sanchez was picked ahead of Fernandes during the Euros, because Renato Sanchez, when he's in full flight, is almost much more box to box, and is just a different type of player, but was more suited to what Portugal demanded from their midfielders at that particular time. Now, we did hear that Fernandes was very influential in trying to get Ronaldo to Manchester United, and to be fair, as much as they've been exposed to each other on international duty, that is still in bursts of 7 to 10 days or whatever. I know that, he does have 33 caps, to be fair, so it's not like they haven't had a lot of experience together, so maybe that's making too much of an excuse. But you would think, still being at the same club, they can find a way, find more of an understanding. But I think it's just the Portuguese squad is in some ways quite top heavy, and maybe Fernandes at times has been a victim of that in terms of what's been asked of him.
Okay, we've got to take a break. Dan McDonald at Lansdowne Road and Johnny Ward here in studio on OTB Football Saturday. Our preview ahead of our commentary of the Republic of Ireland against Azerbaijan. Stephen Doyle and Stewie Byrne calling it from 5. We're on the air until 7, and we're back after this.
Football on Off the Ball.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to 7 on this extended show, because we've got live commentary of the Republic of Ireland's game against Azerbaijan from Lansdowne Road with Stephen Doyle and Stewie Byrne in the commentary box. Johnny Ward in studio with me. And Stewie, as a former Shelburne Pat Strada midfielder, I'm just interested in Josh Cullen, because Stephen Kenny kind of feels that he's quite pivotal right now, and he seems to be the number one man in that centre position at the moment.
I agree. I was fairly drawn to him the other night when I was commentating on the game. I was just kind of having a really good look at him, because I felt he had an extremely difficult role. Of all the Irish players, I think he had probably one of the most difficult ones. The fact of the matter was that he was playing in that sort of central position, just in front of the back four, back five, whatever. But because Portugal had so many players like Ronaldo, Fernandes, that kind of play in the pocket, they were constantly drifting in around him all the time. So he effectively had to play the game, with eyes in the back of his head, sort of stuff. So you're always on the half turn. You're always aware of who's on your shoulder. You're constantly. You have to multitask in that position, because you have to see what's ahead of you, what's going on in the game, but you have to have an awareness of what's off your shoulder. You have to be listening to the communication that's coming at the same time, so it can be all very overwhelming. So I thought he did it excellently. I think he has a very good head on his shoulders. He's a very good understanding of that position of the game. But when he gets the ball back, I think his use of the ball, especially in that first half, was top drawer. I mean, how many times did you see him with the outside of the right foot pass? So comfortable doing. I think he did it two or three times in the first half, and he made it look easy. So he was very calm, very collected. So I think he's a key player for us.
It's interesting, JD, is that he's 25, and you know, he's been such a peripheral figure. Your old buddy Wezo, Stewie, obviously it took him a long time to establish himself, longer again obviously to get his Ireland cap, but I thought Cullen was, like, the jury on Hendrick. I mean, can the jury be out at this stage? Like, Hendrick was probably the weakest of the three midfielders, but like that was a performance. It was a coming of age performance for Josh Cullen, because we're so infatuated with British football here that we don't really see him playing in Belgium, obviously, and he didn't look at all out of place, I thought. And it was a real you know, I think it was kind of evidence, without going on about Stephen Kenny again, I think it was evidence in Kenny really talking up and trusting in a player and getting kind of the rewards from it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And he wouldn't have been... I know he'd Hendrick in beside him the other night, and it's almost like he was the... He was the senior guy in there. Mm. You know, I think he just has that aura about him. He understands that role to a T. It may well be the fact that he's been playing in Belgium, on the continent, that's allowed him to maybe get a better understanding of that role. Because you know, a lot on the continent, you play with a lot of players in that position. I don't know, but to me anyway, he certainly looked like he was calm, collected. He never overrushed, never panicked. An older Irish team, I felt, if you take the first half the other night, what did we see happen? Portugal were squeezing us. They were squeezing the pie, but they weren't getting back. They weren't doing any recovery runs. But what we did very well the other night was we were calm in possession when we went forward. We didn't rush it. We didn't overpass. You know, we kind of played ourselves out of trouble, and we were able to get up the pitch on you know, more than one occasion in the first half. I think in the past we would have made we would have rushed it forward. We would have looked to maybe knock it in behind for a Shane Long to run into, and then we all charge up the pitch and that kind of stuff. Like, you know, I just felt there was a different dynamic about the Ireland team, a different there was a calmness about us, more of an understanding maybe. But you know, it's useless if it's only going to be the one game. It has to be a regular thing, and I think the Irish crowd have to be able to see that on a regular basis, and that's probably why this game is hugely important.
Just if you're joining us, the team news for the game against Azerbaijan. We have Gavin Bazunu in goal, Seamus Coleman, Shane Duffy and John Egan. Looks like a back three with Matt Doherty and James McLean making that a five. Josh Cullen and Jason Malumbi, and then we got Aaron Connolly, Troy Parrish and Adam Ida. Adam Ida the other night, well, talking about players coming of age, it was if Daniel Farke was watching, I'd say he was very impressed.
Yeah, I think again another one that is progressing all the time. You know, for such a big, strong physical presence, he's quite nimble. He's very dynamic. He's not overly aggressive. You know, he's not one of these that, you know, it goes and sticks an elbow into you or whatever. He's hold of play was excellent on occasion the other night. Again, when we needed to get out, and he was, you know, surrounded by two, three players. He was drawn in fouls, and he had, again, another one that had that sort of that calmness about him for 19 years of age. I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, we have to remind ourselves how young these guys are, you know, and that the potential that they have. I mean, these guys have another 15 years in them, like, you know, at least, you know, when you think about it like that. So it really bodes well for what's currently happening, for the dynamic that's happening at the moment with Jim Crawford's under 21s, the fact that Stephen had been with the under 21s. There's a continuity now starting to happen between the underage teams coming right through to the senior team. It takes time. You have to stick with it. You have to be patient. And I know you're getting an awful lot of texts there and messages to the contrary, but you know, that's always going to happen. You know, people, you have to be brave. You have to have a brave manager that's going to stick with this. And Stephen will do that. He'll stick with it. And if it works, sorry, if it doesn't work, then the time we'll know when it's not working. And you know, things will probably change then. But I've I think there's loads more legs in this yet.
Yeah, and a lot of personalities that just haven't emerged yet or haven't come through, because like he does, you know, club career, obviously those goals that he got, you know, against Preston, you were thinking, oh, this is, he's going to kick on, and for Connolly it's kind of stuttered a bit, and he probably hasn't had the best off season. Troy Parrott has had to go out in a second loan to get going. I don't know. I mean, I spoke about this in the first half. You were watching the 21s, you know, Stewie, and just when you see some of the play, like the likes of Evan Ferguson, you're just like, oh my god, like some of these players, if they really click. Evan Ferguson could well be playing for the Ireland senior team within 2 or 3 years, even though he's only 16, the size of him, like.
Yeah, that's it. That, you know, and that's why I think it's important that the message gets out there, that we constantly, you know, we speak about this, that there's a continuity here, there's a plan in place to bring players through, you know, whether it be Tom Moan or Paul O'Zam, all working at underage level, they're all singing from the same hymn sheet, and they're bringing these players through. And you rightly point out, Johnny, the 21s, you know, if we had a fabulous 21s under Stephen Kenny. We have just as good a 21s team now under Jim Crawford. You probably don't get to see them as much as we would like to see them, but they're coming through. You've got 4 or 5 players in that team that could be good enough to get to be knocking on the door of the senior team. So again, that will happen. It's just a matter of sticking with it. Just to be patient, really.
Yeah, if the senior team beat Bosnia 2-0 away from home, you go, oh, that's a good result. Although we got a few more, what would I say, contrary texts on 53106 here. Astonishing to listen to the continuing Stephen Kenny love-in echo chamber here. Just to say clearly, there's a significant cohort of supporters who clearly and frankly, with great justification, given our appalling results since his appointment, regard the Kenny appointment as arguably the worst in the history of Irish football, thanks to John Delaney.
So let me come in there. In fairness, it's not a Stephen Kenny love-in, right? Because the reality is there are other managers out here that could do the exact same thing, okay? But he's the right man for now. He's the right man for now. He understands it. But if it doesn't work out, then there are other people that can come in and still try and play good football, bring through youth. You know, it's not black or white. It's not Stephen Kenny or else go back to lumping it forward. You know, so that's, I think it's important that we articulate that.
Well, yeah. So like, I was reared on your 88, Italian 90 in those times. Obviously, I didn't know a good football game from a bad football game. But I would laud Stephen Kenny for, it was on Eamon Dunphy's podcast, and I can't remember when it was, but he freely acknowledged, like,
the Charles Hughes way wasn't the way.
Yeah, he didn't. Stephen Kenny didn't go to Ireland games, he said, because he didn't enjoy the way that they played. And Eamon Dunphy obviously called out Jack Charlton famously in that Egypt game, and I think Eamon said subsequently, like, that you couldn't really call out Jack. Jack was like a complete national hero. Now, Jack brought totally different aspects, like an absolute legend of a man in many respects. He brought different aspects in terms of pressing and all that. But you go back to the 1974 game against the USSR, Liam Brady's debut, and in many of the boring nights during the pandemic when they showed some classic games, that came on. And I could not get over that in 1974, we were playing a far, far more attractive brand of football than effectively we did for many of the years from the late 80s up until the appointment of Stephen Kenny. And I don't want to be associated anymore with a country that it sees itself as being unable to play football, and it's all about set pieces and heart and all that, because we shouldn't be like that. We love football in this country, but we also love to see proper football played. And I think we have to move away from that. Stephen Kenny is not trying to reinvent the wheel. He just wants us to have faith that we can play breathtaking attacking football like Dundalk even did at times against very good teams in Europe.
That's a very good point. I think with Charlton, when you're getting there, when you're in the top 8 teams at a tournament, when everybody, remember, like, we know sporting success really as a nation for 50, 60 years since independence that we could all go to. You can't go to Gaelic games outside of Ireland. The rugby team is amateur. Olympics is a TV event. So when you're going to Germany, when you're going around Hanover and Gelsenkirchen and Stuttgart, and then you're going to Italia 90, that's a huge part of it. And then being within the top 8 in the world and being in the top 8 in Europe. But in the last 10 to 15 years, where it's all been about, like, Trapattoni not being interested in the League of Ireland at all, you'd have press conferences on the same day, big games, We would get there in 2012, but it was an absolute disaster. Yeah. Euro 2012 was an absolute disaster of caveman football.
And it was, Judy, and you couldn't rely indefinitely on, like, the obviously Jack Charlton got players through the grandparents' rule and all that. We couldn't rely on the lack of football industry, and the lack of success of the League of Ireland has been a scandal, really. And it's been a scandal that we've had to send kids away from their home at really, really young ages to get any sort of a football education, and this is just seen as par for the course. That's not good enough anymore. And now with the Brexit situation, we have a couple of squads now in Turner's Cross, Colin O'Brien squads, that are effectively almost entirely home based apart from Kevin Zeffie and maybe one other player. We have to have, even the under 21s, we had two players from Bowes playing and a Bray Wanderers keeper playing yesterday. We have to move away from the days of we can just rely on the lads in England, because we can't anymore, and that's been obvious from the lack of Premier League players that we have at the moment.
Well, it's also important because the Premier League is now a global league, and the Premier League is a much bigger thing than it was 30 years ago, when you had all Irish players and Liverpool winning championship winning teams. You had Damien Duff winning the Premier League with Chelsea. Jamie McGrath went to Maynooth University, plays in Scotland for St Mirren, played the other night. Josh Cullen, we just spoke about there, Stewie, plays for Anderlecht. We had a lot of players coming out of the League of Ireland, and these players in the under 21s could be in the national team. We just maybe have to have a different approach and a different route for a lot of these players to go. The under 21s we had yesterday, that they might be playing football in Holland or Germany or Italy or in the Championship, and that's just a little bit of a different way than it was in the past.
Or here, and I think there has to be buy-in from everybody. People need to kind of maybe have a broader look at things. Why can't we have a stronger domestic league? You know, why there should be more regular players from League of Ireland getting into these squads. You know, we've got players here playing in Europe regularly. Look at what happened this year. Huge success in Europe. Not huge success in Europe, but Dundalk, Bowes, Rovers, even though Rovers disappointing, they were all played extremely well. Bowes were, in particular, relative to their current scenario, were excellent, and they're only going to get better and better. But there's a the England's a monster, because it's this thing that's just constantly always been there, it's always going to be there, but it's not the answer. We have to be able to kind of stand on our own two feet. We have to be able to develop the game here. We have to educate people about why we're so obsessed by England. There's huge historical reasons for this, and it's something that I get quite frustrated by sometimes. I kind of wonder, why are you so obsessed by United or City? Or, have you ever, just think about it for a minute. There's something here. There's an opportunity to be part of something real and something raw and develop something that's here. It's a wonderful product here, but it just needs huge buy-in from people, because the perception here is that League of Ireland is in a particular place, but it's not the biggest problem is the infrastructure and the resources and the finances that it has to leverage. But it's not something we're going to answer now. We're obviously getting closer to kickoff, but it should be regularly part of the conversation.
Just briefly, JD, what I liked was Keith Ward, who is a really good playmaker for Bowes, got a great goal in Europe last season. I was speaking to him about the Bowes players coming through this year, young Jamie Mullins, who got a goal at 16, and Keith Ward, who's 30. He said the likes of Dawson Devine, Jamie Mullins, they're doing things now that I just don't think I can do, and it's just progression of young players. Yeah. And this is happening. I'm not trying to talk about the League of Ireland in this glowing terms, but the young players coming through, they know how to play football. They want to keep the ball on the ground, and that's going to be, why can't our international team do that?
But it's just harder to break into England now. I mean, that
much harder.
It's much harder. It's a global league, and it's the top league. You look at Ronaldo going back to Man United. 5-3-1-6, lads. I'm all for Kenny, but we can't dress everything upwards. Clear from Cullen at Charlton. He was the only one in the top 40 players who understands that midfield role. Should have been trusted earlier to play. Narrative of Belgium has made him suddenly pickable. Is unfair on him. Yes, he's improving as you'd expect. And another one, hi lads. The only point you made that I agree on. And Stephen Kenny's afraid of no team that'll win games. They've got great forward and great defenders now, so let's get this 4-0 tonight. We're on our way to a great future. Are the players out there? Have they got back into the dressing room there, Stewie?
No, it's an empty pitch now. Sprinklers are out. I have to say the pitch is probably as best as I've seen. I mean, the pitch is always good here, to be fair, and especially when it comes to September, off the back of a good summer.
When did you last play there?
When did I last play?
Deportivo, wasn't it?
Oh, Deportivo, yeah.
That wasn't a bad night.
It was a bad guess for me. Yeah.
This lad, Wezo, was trying to show that he could do a thing or two.
This little kid, yeah, he was, fancied himself a little bit in the middle of the pitch. Yeah, I don't know what happened to him in the end. Yeah.
What's the verdict, Stewie? Can we do it?
We can. I'm a bit with Johnny. I just want to really see a positive performance, energy, ball possession, move the ball quick. I think if we do that, goals will come. But I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, I think we'll win this 3-0 for now. I think it will be tight because I think they'll make it awkward, Azerbaijan. I'm more interested in a really positive performance.
Okay, so we'll be back to you in a moment for commentary with Stephen Doyle of the Republic of Ireland against Azerbaijan. Has put him under pressure, blares through the tannoy there at Lansdowne Road. You can hear it, I'm sure. Johnny, how do you feel? How are you calling it this evening?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to bluff and say I know a lot about Azerbaijan. I've seen their results and they do keep it tight. They don't lose by much, but I think there'll be goals in this. That team, just there can't not be goals. It can't be another Luxembourg with the team he's put out. This is much more like a Stephen Kenny team with those three kids up front. I think we'll win by 2 or 3 nil.
Okay. Johnny Ward, thanks as always for Football Saturday. Back with you next week.
Football on Off the Ball.